Blog Talk Radio.
Whoa.
Good evening, everyone. And this is Carl from ISF and Deviant Legion. And we are very, very happy today to welcome an old friend and someone I haven't talked to in a number of years. And he lives basically right down the street, or at least in Brooklyn. and that would be Scooter McRae. Scooter, how are you, sir?
I'm good. I'm glad you're so happy. I'll make sure to take care of that in the next few minutes.
Good.
That's my opening joke.
A little...
All right, it's going to be one of those evenings.
Yes, it is. Well, you're on, so it has to be one of those evenings. So tell our listeners a little bit about yourself and what you do and what you've done and how you got into it, and we'll get the Shatter Dead here quite quickly.
Yeah, more than likely, yeah, because that's really kind of where it all starts, actually. So, yeah, I mean, I just wrote, directed Shatter Dead back in 94, it came out, and then wrote, directed 16 Tongues, and that came out in 2004, I think, because I like to make sure there's a good space between releases. And then I wrote and directed St. Frankenstein. Wow, I've lost track. Was it 2015 or 2016? Let's say 2015. What the hell? That sounds about right. And in between, you know, I work on I shoot and edit video for a living. I do soundtrack work every now and then for other people. I used to write for Fangoria for a little bit. I wasn't one of their, you know, key writers, but I'm always writing reviews, articles here and there. So that was a point of pride for a while as well. So I've written freelance for other people and other publications as well. And I think that covers a lot of ground right there, doesn't it?
Yeah. And not only that, you're a former fellow podcaster. And I know you do mm-hmm. sound design and things like that. And so you keep yourself busy. Tell us a little bit of how Shatter Dead came to be and what it's about and why we connected so well as far as that particular film.
Shatter Dead is like any venereal disease that if you don't protect yourself, it will eventually creep up on you. So you have to be careful. That goes back to, it came out in 94. But I shot it in 92, so that means, here I am, pardon me for giving away information about myself, so I was 26 at the time, that was, you know, that being my first feature was a bit of a landmark for me, and, you know, it was an examination of a universe in which God has just pretty much abandoned the place, and people stop dying, or they die, but the souls don't leave the body because they have nowhere else to go. You know, the Romero thing was, there's no more room in hell, devil walk the earth. And I was like, oh, you know, I'll just take that literally. When there's no more room in heaven, everyone's just kind of stalled here in this kind of purgatory state. And I know that you love this kind of religious, rich, religious allegory stuff in horror. And I know we also both come about from two different directions entirely, because I come at it, I guess, technically as an atheist, as someone who finds faith and belief fascinating and interesting, and I respect it. I respect people who have faith and belief. I'm not someone who's trying to take a dump on people who do. I feel like it's a choice like anything else. You choose to believe in God, you choose to not believe in God. And, you know, I think both have their valid points, their valid arguments. But, and I believe you, on the other hand, are probably a little closer to the Lord than I am.
But I also work in churches, so that sort of gives me a little leeway there.
With whoever's in charge than I do.
yeah, this is probably true, but who knows who's in charge? You know, I mean, I'm definitely Christian and come from a more liberal sense of Christianity than you know, your
conservative Christians, because I believe in respect of other religions, interdenominational respect, and also, of course, LGBTQ and so on and so forth. So I'm on the other side of that. So one of the things about Shatterdead that I love is the tagline. And tell us how that came about. And tell us what the tagline is.
That's really funny. The tagline, which is God hates you, it's the other three little words. When people ask for those three little words, you know, it's not. I never say I love you. I just say God hates you. And I feel like if I ever get a tattoo, I'll have that on my chest somewhere in large letters. But that line wasn't even in the script when I originally wrote it, and it was certainly not on my mind. And if I remember correctly, I just was working on a – it's funny you should ask me this, because I had forgotten myself where it came from. And recently I don't know if you know about this. I don't know if I mentioned it, but Shatterday is coming out in book form as a screenplay book from Hesse Cloud Pictures.
I know it's going to be released by Vinegar Syndrome, and that's one of the reasons you're on, is to promote that and, of course, promote the book. But tell us about the script and how that came about to be published.
No, I'm sorry. I was building up toward that. I'm sorry. I was an aside. But the thing that happened is when I was working on that book, I had totally forgotten the story of how that line came in. But, you know, I had to sit down with the script. The book itself, I took every single page of the script, which I haven't looked at in a very long time, and was reading through each page and making notes. So each page has notes. What was different, what was the same, why things were changed, why some things are better, why some things are worse. And going through it, I had totally forgotten about the whole thing that God hates you wasn't even in the script, which is a line that is said by the people who are coming to attack the house in Shatterdead. That's his line. That's his ending of his speech. God hates you. None of that's in the script. So I remember distinctly now that the night before we were shooting, I wrote that entire diatribe for that actor to deliver. And in fact, in the movie, you can see he's reading off a piece of paper. That piece of paper is what I handed him before we started shooting. I wrote that the night before. Here you go. This is what you're going to read when you come into the house. And it ended it with that. But the reason in the first place, God Hates You came about because I think it was the week before, after we had finished shooting, and we were all just so tired. As when I say crew, it was myself, Matt Howe, the camera person, and whichever actors we had been shooting with that day, because there was no crew. And we had a particularly rough day, and I was like, oh, my God, you know, that's what a fuck of a day. God just hates us. And we were sitting at the table trying to come up with taglines, and I'd said that about something else. And then there was this moment of silence, and I just said, oh, that's it. God hates you. And we all sat there, all four of us, maybe five, and everyone just kind of nodded and said, that's a good tagline. Yeah. You should use that.
Yeah.
I was like, that's great. I'm going to use it. But I said, all good taglines, best taglines are actually in the movie. So I remember thinking to myself, now I got to write that in. Someone actually has to say it because it'll be so much better. And that's
what happened. So tell us a little bit about, you know, one of the things we do with the ISF podcast is we feature independent film directors and producers and such. Tell us how this all came together and how you worked this out and what kind of crew and friends, how did you get all that together? Just give us a good, like, description of how Shatterdead all came together for you. And how you decided to do it in the first place.
That's very interesting. And again, something that, you really got to me at the right time, because some of the stuff I would not have remembered even a month or two ago, or at least not as clearly, but working on that screenplay book again, going through, I was like, oh yeah, all started coming back to me. So your timing is perfect. But what I remember is at the time I had a core group of friends. Like I said, I mentioned Matt Howe earlier, who shot the movie. We had makeup and effects by Arthur Jolly, who did both makeup effects and stunt work. And there were one or two other key people, some of whom eventually ended up acting in the movie, and one who ended up doing some of the music, Steve Rajkumar. And we were sitting around one night, and I remember thinking, you know, it would be a really good idea is if we try to do some kind of movie where six or seven of us, 10-minute segment, you know, we'll have one idea. It was almost like what they call that, an exquisite corpse. And I said, the idea of the exquisite corpse is you had all these people working on it and no one knowing what anyone else was doing on it, except maybe for a common theme or a common character, right? So, that being the case, I said, as almost jokingly, well, it's an exquisite corpse. It needs to be a zombie movie because, well, that's a pretty exquisite corpse right there. So we were all kind of nodding in an agreement. I'm like, yeah, okay, we all went our separate ways. And a little time went by. And we all came back together again, and no one really had anything. And I had come up with this core idea of like a zombie movie. And so talking to other people about it, like Arthur was like, well, you got to have this scene or something like this so I can do this stunt or I can do this makeup effect. And I was like, okay, got it. And, I was talking to everyone like, what would you want to see in a zombie movie? And I just remember talking it through with people and just kind of going off and writing it very quickly, pretty darn fast. One of the things that happened too is that the lead actress, Stark Raven, who I was living with at the time, just before we moved in together, actually, she was part of something that she belonged to, where I went to the meeting with her and. People were stating goals for things that they were going to be doing. And I was there as a friend of hers and they looked over at me and it was like, well, you're a friend of hers. What kind of goal can you give yourself in the next year? And I said, you know, by this time next year, I will make my first movie. How's that? And they're like, okay, what are you going to do about it? I said, well, I'll start working on it immediately. So this ran concurrently with that. And Stark herself was itching to do some more acting and be in a movie. She had done some stage stuff and little things here and there. But I was like, well, okay, I'll write this. I'll write a lead part for you because it would be great. I love her look. I thought she was a good actress. And, you know, I had really never seen too many zombie movies where you had a lead female actress who was the focal point and the strong point of the movie, like the strongest character. And I don't mean right. like in some Rambo way, but just like, yeah, she's the center of it, so she does the things that, you know, you'd normally see either a guy or a guy and a girl, or, you know, like, so she took everything on herself being the lead. So anyway, I mean, I'm stretching this out here a little bit, I'm sorry, but that was what led into the idea that, like, I'm going to make a movie now. At the time, I worked at a video facility in New York called CTL Electronics. It's letters CTL Electronics. And I was mostly doing sales there. It was all industrial video equipment, not consumer stuff, not for home use. So we had Betacam, 3/4, Super VHS, High 8, but really like the expensive stuff that like news crews would use. That rhymed far too well. But like, you know, local news stations would go around with these big frickin' Betacam shoulder cameras, you know, when cameras would actually sit on your shoulder, you know. So we had all that there and we rented it out in addition to selling it. So it was kind of like, well, I have access to this stuff. I can't afford to shoot on film. And everyone at this point, this is 92, so, we shot in 92. So this was probably more like 91 where I was still discussing it. But people really weren't shooting on video as much then. It's not the way that they are now. I mean, technically everyone is shooting on video now, aren't they? With the capture technology. So few things shoot on film anymore. So, you know, what was once seen as trashy, low budget is now the norm. But yeah, I was able to get a reduced rate for the rentals. And then I knew I would have a place where I can do my editing because there was an editing facility here as well. It wasn't a top end facility, mind you, but it worked. And it was good enough. And, you know, again, this is back in the day before people were able to do the stuff in their own home with their laptop or anything else. I mean, in the 90s, it was still very, very expensive to shoot, let's say, a Betacam or Betacam SP, which is what we shot on, which was considered a TV format. You know, that was the kind of thing you would shoot and be on the news that night, and then have the facilities do the editing. So yeah, it was just no other way I could have done it, and it was very lucky and a great debt of gratitude to Mr. Louie, who still in business, CTL Electronics, and you know, him letting me get away with doing all that and giving me the price breaks. So yeah, so we shot it quickly. It was a 10-day shoot over the course of, I think, a summer. You know, we do a weekend here. I would basically cash my paycheck at work, and then we would go out and shoot for a weekend, and then I think we would take either the next weekend off or the weekend after that. I think I got my paychecks once every 2 weeks or something like that. And then I'd have, like, you know, $500 to blow to transportation and food or whatever else we needed to buy tapes, you know, whatever, some props. You know, everything was got, you know, catch as catch can. Nobody got paid for acting or anything else, for shooting. So it was just a matter of feeding people and making sure that we had special props or makeup effects, that kind of stuff was paid for. And then the editing, once we had all the footage, that took a while. That took about a year, just because I needed to be able to afford to be able to do it. I had to go through all the footage. You know, I did a low end. Like, we shot on Betacam. I transferred all the footage to Hi8. I edited it on Hi8. Made my notes, my editing notes, and then I went in and I had to redo the edit Betacam, going back to the original master tapes, to get a higher end product, and that's what eventually ended up being done and going out into the world. And then, of course, along the way, there was scoring it. We had this guy Steve Rajkumar, who wrote some really great original music for it, but he didn't have enough of it. And he did this great stuff, and I was like, dude, you're good, but you're really slow. So then I had to jump in and just do some stuff. I also was in it's hard to call it a band, but I guess it was a band called Geek Messiah back in college. So I went back and some of our archive recordings, and I stole some stuff from there, and I threw it in the movie as well. We were just kind of a noise band. So, some of the odder music in there is from that. But yeah, everything coming together, sound effects work. I mean, it was, you know, again, this is all back in the day where it was actually time consuming and expensive to do this stuff. Where everything now is, oh, I just go out with my phone and record that audio that I need, then bring it in, throw it on my computer. Oh, and by the way, I can also score the entire movie on that same computer. You know, so it's mind-boggling to look back. You know, all of us, this whole group of us, all of us who were doing this stuff, were all at the mercy of the available technology of the time and the access that we had to it, which again is gone now.
That's right, exactly. And one of the things that I want to impress on our listeners is that during this period, this is 91, 92, 93, when you're doing mm-hmm. all this, one of the reasons we had you on in the first place is there's this whole raft of independent filmmakers from that era, which we call the DIYs. And you just did it yourself. You found a way to get it done. And yep. That, to me, is amazing. I keep saying to people, you know, who, like, I talk to or interact with Incredibly Strange Films, is that, you know, at least these people made a movie. What have you done? You know, just to get that done, I give you props, especially at the time and what you had to go through. Seriously.
Yes. Thank you, sir. Yeah. I mean, look, you know, I look back on it. It's stunning. But, it's also one of the reasons why it takes 2 years to do something when you have no money. You know, it seems hilarious. So, yeah, we shot it all in 10 days. And then, you know, so where the hell was it? You know, well, now it's a matter of waiting to get money together or finding time, you know, because when you're also, like, for editing purposes, if I'm going to get free editing time or, you know, reduced rate editing time, it's not on my schedule. It's on when the edit room is available. And that might not be it'll be available in 3 months. And then you can have a few days on it, but then you might lose it again because someone else is coming in to do something, you know? So these are the kind of things you have to put with when you have no money and you need access to a facility or if you need access to equipment. When is the equipment available? Because when I was shooting Shattered Dead, and I was renting that equipment out at half price, if someone else needed the equipment and they came in at the last minute, well, they got the equipment. I had that happen once. Well, some asshole came in on like the day I'm getting ready to leave and comes in at like an hour before we're closing on Friday to come in and get some equipment out. I still remember. And this guy was like, "Oh, I need to rent that camera." I was like, "Fuck, that's the camera I'm shooting with this week." And so he got it. And then I had to take a lesser camera for that weekend's shoot. And I remember being really pissed about that. But, you know, again, this is what happens.
Mm-hmm. So tell us a little bit about the announcement and how that all came about with the restoration and Binnaker syndrome. And how did that all come about?
Oh, that's very interesting. Well, you know, I need to give props to Jesse at Diabolik DVD, because he had approached me well over a year ago, and he had said, "Hey, listen, you doing anything with Shattered Dead?" Because he has Cauldron Films as a label, and I was like, "No, it's mine now. It's, you know, no one has it." And he said, "Well, I'd like to release it at some point." I said, "Great, it's yours." We just stuck out a little handshake thing there. And I was like, I guess I need to start figuring out what I'm going to do with it now. Am I just going to release the old Tape Master? And then I was thinking about it, and I remembered that at some point I had transferred over from the original master tapes to HD cam the sections that I needed to do a recut somewhere down the line if I ever wanted to do that, which is amazing when I think back on it, because in my head I hadn't really given it much thought. It was more a way for me to archive that footage than to think about revisiting the footage. But I thought with Blu-ray looking like how good it looks and the current master for Shattered Dead on Betacam tape, is the current, up until now, the current master for Shattered Dead was actually two generations down from what it should have been. And at old analog video, when, you know, even at the high-end stuff, you quickly start to lose the audio fidelity, and the video itself starts to get milky looking. You lose the black levels, and you know, things just start to fall apart and get a little shitty looking. So I sat down, I transferred over those tapes, those backup tapes I made, into a computer to take a look at the footage, and I was like, wow, this looks significantly better. So I think I'm going to have to consider going in and doing a full remaster, where what I would do is I would take the old edit and I would find the shot that I needed to lay over that shot. So it was like a jigsaw puzzle, basically. And it was a bit of a crazy errand. I mean, I was like, this is going to take a while. And it did. It ended up taking me about 4 months. I'll get to that in a minute. It may have even taken longer than that. Cut to what happened was Jesse was releasing other stuff through Cauldron. He was busy. And then I got contacted almost out of the blue by Ross Snyder and Bill Hellfire. And they're like, "Hey, you know, what's up with Shattered Dead?" And I was like, "Well, I promised it to Jesse over at Diabolik DVD." But as I was talking to them more, a little bit about it, one of the things that came up is that they had a facility that would be able to transfer over film to video. And I have a whole bunch of Super 8 and 16 millimeter stuff from back in the day that has never been transferred over. And I was like, well, shit, you know, in lieu of payment, I don't need money for this at this point. Would you be able to transfer over all this 16 millimeter footage? Like, it's my senior thesis film from college, and then another short from college, other stuff that never even got properly completed. Because I thought, like, boy, if I have this and we can put these as extras on the Blu-rays, and, you know, if anyone actually likes the stuff that I do and wants to watch, I think they'll find it very interesting to see some of my older stuff, because some of my older stuff, I can assure you, ties into the new stuff. You know, the fruit didn't fall far from the branch, you know, in my case. So everything I've done feels like, yeah, that's something I did, you know, for better or worse.
That's very true, actually, of what I've seen of yours, which is only Tongues and Shattered Dead. Those two are very well connected. We'll get to Tongues here in a moment. But go ahead. Yeah, I agree 100%. You know it's a Scooter McRae film.
Thanks. Yeah, it goes back. I can assure you, it goes back to the older stuff too. And also, one of the things that's great too is I also found my very first completed Super 8 film from when I was 16. I was 16, going on 17, back in high school. And, so they, we'll get to that in a second. But so what happened was, I was like, they were like, yeah, we could transfer all that stuff over for you as part of the deal. So I said, okay, let me go talk to Jesse. I mentioned it to him, and I said, Jesse, I shook your hand, and I will never renege on a deal. But I want to see how you feel about this, is that I've got that offer. They can transfer over all the footage. And I will say this to you. I've already seen some what you released on Cauldron and some, you know, standard def shot on video movie doesn't really look like part of what you are looking to release. And I said, so if you're okay with it, I think it might be a better deal for me to go with them. But I also, I'm fine staying with you. I love you. You're great. And you're going to have this label releasing good stuff. So I leave it in your hands. No ill feelings. If you want me to stay with you, I will be happy to be with you, as a matter of fact. But this might be the better deal for me. And Jesse was like, no, go with the better deal. And I'm just mentioning this because he was so lovely and it was so great of him to let me pursue this other way instead. And again, I would have done the same effort and I would have done the same restoration and done it through his company. But I really feel like, especially with the Saturn's core, what do they call that, label, sub-label, through Vinegar City, this is such a perfect fit for it. I mean, you know, there's no question. This is the better place for it to be sitting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and
I just continued the restoration. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I just said that makes absolute sense because certain genre releasing companies have a specific sort of point to what they do. So, yeah, I mean, that makes exact sense.
It does. And, we're talking about Vinegar Syndrome here. Like, Vinegar Syndrome shouldn't be releasing Shattered Dead. It's not in their wheelhouse. They do obscure 35mm stuff and oddball cult items, things that people don't even remember they unearth. So Shattered Dead's not something they should be doing. But, yes, with Saturn's core as a label, that's perfect. That's what they're doing. So, and it's the same thing with Cauldron Films. They're catering to a different audience. And I think if you were to release Shattered Dead through, you know, Cauldron or Vinegar minus the sub-label, I think people would actually just get annoyed. They'd be like, well, you know, we expect a certain kind of movie from Vinegar Syndrome, and this sure as shit ain't it. So it's one of the things to watch out for is not only do you want to get your movie out there, but you want to get it to the right people through the right channels, because otherwise you're going to end up with no audience. You're going to end up with people who feel like they've been flim-flammed. This is, you know, please. So that being said, restoration continued. So I had to go in and I had to replace Jigsaw Puzzle every single shot. And then I went in and I started doing the audio from scratch. And what I discovered is that some of the music from the movie was missing. I just didn't have better audio like than what was in the movie. And it sounded terrible. Also, the music was mixed in with dialogue and sound effects in the master tape. I didn't have an M&E track because I've got time for that shit. No, I could barely get my movie made here. Back when I was doing Shattered Dead, I had basically two in the original cut. I had like two audio channels and that was it. So I had to like bounce and mix and do things in order to get like a third track or a fourth track. There's a moment in that movie where there's like a sound effect, dialogue, and music at the same time. It's a fucking miracle, and I'm not even sure how the hell I did it. So now, of course, I'm on a computer, so it's got like unlimited a number of audio tracks. So I went back to the original production audio as well, which meant that I had to go in and had to clean the audio, then I had to find ambient, and then I had to do the sound effects over again from scratch, and the audio took longer than the video edit. And then I discovered that, with the missing music, what I'm going to have to do now is compose new music. So there are sections now that have entirely new score to them. And I tried to be fair. I tried to make sure that what I was doing was honest to the music that was there before or of the era in which I was working. at the time that I made
Understood.
It. So, you know, I tried to have like a huge, suddenly there's a huge orchestral score. Like, no. I would not have had that back in 92. So I tried to stick with things being a little more electronic. And I mean, admittedly, I did take a few liberties here and there with the new stuff, but I also took liberties in the edit. This new cut of Shattered Dead that's coming out on Blu-ray is now 6 minutes shorter than it's ever been. And part of that is there was a lot of dead space in every cut, because when I went to edit initially, that very first edit that I did, the system I was working on was plus or minus 6 frames. If you have 30 frames in video per second, whenever I went to do an edit, it wasn't exact. So it would be either a few frames off, forward or backward. So I had to build that into each edit, which meant that it was lacking a certain pace. So when I was on the computer now, I was like, well, I could be frame accurate again. I can really get, and you know, sometimes it means that at the end of a shot, an actor is starting to blink. And I was like, well, that's gone. I'm taking that blink because it ruins the rhythm of the edit. And I did remove a few minor things that bothered me. I admit, you know, I don't want to sound like I'm coming across as George Lucas here or something, but you know, there are things in it that have always bothered me, and they're minor things. But so of that 6 minutes that are missing, I would say most of that 6 minutes is the frames being taken out. And there's probably only, I would say at most, 30 seconds actually removed from the movie, maybe less. I think I took out 2 lines of dialogue that bothered me. I did not take out any of the sex or the violence. That's all there. So it was just streamlining a few things. And one of the things that I did do with this release, and thanking again the people at Saturn's Core, the original version of Shattered Dead is on the disc. So if there's someone out there who really is like, hey, I want those 6 minutes back, you got it. And that's why I'm not George Lucas. That original cut that's been going around for the last almost 30 years now, it's on the disc as well. It looks like shit. It sounds like shit. It's edited like crap. But if you want it, you got it.
There you go.
But
So go right ahead. I'm sorry.
Not as sorry as I am. Wait, no. Let me tell you, man. That 4 months, almost on 5 months, was, I mean, just grueling. You know, and to have to go back and you know, once I laid everything out, once I got everything up to, like, normal, like here was the running time, that's when I went back in and started chopping at it. So I had to reconstitute it first, and then I had to tear it apart. So there was work that I did that was like, well, I guess I didn't need to do this work here because I'm just taking it out anyway. But you know, it's a process. But
absolutely,
in the end, I'm so happy. It's the best cut of the movie. It's the first time I'm really like, kind of, I feel a little more gung-ho about it now, where I can go like, yeah, it feels a little bit more like a real movie at points. Look, you know, there's always going to be, it doesn't have enough money to do what it tries to do. So, you know, there's still some stuff in it that's half-assed. But, you know, it at least now it's 6 minutes shorter of half-assedness. So it went from being 82 minutes to 76 minutes. So technically still a feature. We got it over 75 minutes, and I'm happy with it.
Well, you know, that's the main thing. And the thing I wanted to say to you, you know, you seem to poo-poo the sense that there is a small but vibrant cult around this film. And I can tell you I'm one of them, and I can tell you another one is my former partner, Stephen Ronquillo. And I know that Joe Badon, who hopefully may call in or may not, he wasn't sure. But Joe Badon, who directed a film called Sister Tempest, I showed him the original trailer for it, and he like went back to me like, yeah, I got to see this. So, you know, I mean, there are those of us have waved the flag, you know, since we ran into it. Now, I didn't run into the film until, 4 or 5 years ago when we first, you were first on the podcast with me and Steven. But ever since then, it's like, you know, great film. And of course, you know, one of the other things, and we mentioned this at the beginning of the podcast, but the whole, you know, the whole religious aspect of it is different than what most religious themed horror movies are, or what sort of thing, because, you know, you don't get many films that are basically purgatory zombies. You just don't, that doesn't happen. And I just wondered, how did that all come about? I mean, you were thinking of a zombie movie and purgatory and the look of it and the acting in that, it just seems like you're in a different place with this film than you've ever been with any other film. And that's one of the things I really want to impress on our listeners, is that this is really original. This is not anything you've seen before, not even close. And that sense to me is what really makes the film, for, you know, all its quote faults that you find in it, is that the ambiance and what's being done in front of us is something we've never seen before.
First of all, thank you. Thank you for all of that. I really appreciate you saying all that. And I also greatly appreciate the fact that you're still turning people on to this movie. I feel you may be the head of the cult, and I appreciate that. Thank you. Check is in the mail. We'll talk later. And seriously, I'll joke, but I do appreciate it, because it, you know, what's very interesting is that part of the initial idea of Shattered Dead was to just do a straight zombie movie. Like, I remember I mentioned earlier, I was talking to Arthur Jolly, makeup guy and stunt person. So we were kind of like, yeah, you know, let's be undead people and we'll blow their brains out and just have fun and just do a real, like, down and dirty, sleazy zombie movie. So the initial inspiration, the initial intent wasn't even what it turned out to be in the end. And I wish I could say to you something like there was a pivotal moment where suddenly I was like, hey, wait a minute, I could do something that to elevate, you know, I'm saying it's going to elevate the genre or whatever the term is these days people like to use for this stuff. But I don't quite recall how it came to where it is now. I do remember, and certainly that when we looked at what we had for budget in terms of what was available to do, what eventually led to the decision that zombies were walking and talking and not gut munching so much is we just didn't have any budget for that. So this might be the first religious zombie film that was thrust upon the world because of no money. It just didn't have the budget to do a correct zombie film. So we went out, bent over backwards to do a completely incorrect one to what was being made at the time, especially. And certainly what the inspiration was, because, you know, when I talk about my inspiration for Shattered Dead, you know, I'll talk about Fulci, I'll talk about Romero. And although I love Carl Dreyer and I love Ordet, you know, that really wasn't the inspiration for this. Although honestly, it you'd think it would be to some extent. My favorite Dreyer film, and you know, I wish I could say that was the one that made me go, yeah, you know, that's it, that's why we did it. But no, it's the Romero and the Fulci stuff, and then realizing I didn't have the money or the resources of Romero or Fulci, so I better go the other way entirely. So somehow or other, that led to some drunken inspirational moment of like, oh, okay, I guess they're just like the souls are trapped in the body. I'm sure it was that quick and easy, because I know the way I think, and I'll just throw something out like that. Like, because whenever I work, it's always very automatic. You know, when I'm writing something, no matter what it is, there's always that moment where I go like, oh, okay, I guess it's going to have to be like this, and it's blah, 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 and whatever happens. Oh, I guess my Frankenstein is going to be two genders. Sure, why not? You know, 16 tongues. Oh, yeah, you know, some guy's covered with tongues. It's called 16 tongues. I love it. I'll figure it out later. But sincerely, that is almost always how something that I ended up working on came about, was just saying some stupid shit while I was having a drink with some friends or lying around. You know, there was no real, I can't find the workup moment. Well, it started here and then became this and then it became that. It's usually almost always like a bolt of lightning that just kind of like hits. I'm like, yep, there you go. Now we're going to go ahead. With Shattered Dead, though, you know, again, this comes from a point of, you know, from an atheist, you know, and it's funny to say it this way. There's belief and there's non-belief.
And although I say I'm an atheist, I don't like to say I'm a non-believer. I like to say I'm an atheist. There's a difference. Because I certainly experienced myself things that I would say, oh, that's supernatural. We had, where I live now, we very definitely had a ghost in here for a while, which seems to have disappeared recently. But I'd be more than happy to say that I've experienced supernatural, you know, stuff here at home even. You know, and it was fantastic, actually. It was nice to have a ghost here for a while, and there was nothing scary at all about it. It was actually kind of beautiful to know that there was something moving around here for a little bit. But that's probably some other discussion for some other time. But with Shattered Dead, what was the question again? Sorry, I had my head so
fast. Basically, how you came up with the idea of religious zombies. You know, but the thing is, what I hear from that is, one thing is, go keep drinking with your friends and coming up with stuff. Seriously. Because now you mentioned 16 Tons, and you mentioned St. Frankenstein. So tell us a little bit about those films and what they're about.
You know what? Before I do, I want to say one thing about Shattered Dead. To your previous question, I just remembered, and it was one thing that is still to me striking about Shattered Dead, which is that whenever you see horror movies in which religion is involved, very rarely, you know, it's usually the devil, it's angels, but so rarely is it just about God doing his shtick, you know, whatever it is. So the thing that I was happy about with Shattered Dead and the sequel that I wrote is that, you know, from jump, it's like there's a God, and this is what's happening because there's a God. So there's no question up front. Is this religious? Is this blah, blah, blah? No. It comes right out of the gate and says, okay. So here, the supposition is that God's left, or God is like this, you know, the souls are trapped in the bodies even after death. So now we'll just go from there. So the people don't wander around saying, why did God do this? Why? Yeah, but, oh, you think there's a God or some other thing at play? No. We just ignore all that shit. It's accepted. There's a God, and this is what's happening. Which, you know, again, coming from someone who is an admitted atheist, I have no answer for that as to why I find that so in my sandbox, something that I like to play with. But it is something that I like to play with. And when I wrote a sequel to Shattered Dead, which is going to be part of that book, because no one is ever going to give me the money to do that fucking thing, it once again starts from the supposition that, like, yep, God did this, God's here, now we just have to deal with it and figure out from there. So it's kind of like those religious movies that get made with Nicolas Cage or whatever they're called, the Hereafter or whatever those things were, where even they're a little more playful about it, like, ooh, God, ooh, whatever. It's like, nope, I just walk into the room, sit down and say, okay, fuck, this is God did this, now what?
Mm-hmm. And that is one of the things that really hit me with the film, was that it hit you over the head and, like, said, okay, this is the situation, what do we do now? And again, I find that in all the, you know, I'm hooked on religious horror films. In fact, my co-host says, you know, if death was in my house, all you have to say is, hey, I got a religious horror film. You can watch it before I kill you. And I'd come out of the closet or wherever I was hiding.
Oh, that's funny.
But the thing is, films are unique. There's a real punk ethos to them, number one. And just the ideas, like, okay, 16 Tongues. The basic idea is you got a guy with 16 tongues on his body, and he finds a girl with 16 labias on her body. Okay, where the hell did that come from?
You know, I don't like to talk too much about, you know, what an alcoholic I am, but I'm going to guess that at some point I had one drink, just one, mind you, just one drink too many. And sincerely, I can tell you that's where that came from. I know very specifically at one point I remember being kind of drunk and doing the dishes, and I was in the room, and in the next room I had my my Platters CD playing, Best of the Platters, and song 16 Tons, T-O-N-S, came on, and I was doing the dishes in the next room, and I heard the song wrong. Like, I heard it, and I was like, did he just say 16 tongues? What the hell's that? But, you know, I finished the dishes, I walked in the next room, and I saw the title of the song. I was like, oh, it's completely wrong. But then I was like, tons. That's an interesting title, but I don't know what it is. So that was one of those rare instances where the title came first, and I was like, I don't know what this is yet, but that's a good title. What can I do with that? Is it a giallo? Is it a science fiction movie? Is it a porno? In the end, of course, it turns out, well, it's all three, right?
Exactly.
But that really is what happened. And I remember I used to refer to it as a party joke. Like I would remember hanging out with friends and I said, I got this title, 16 Tongues. There's a guy, he's covered in tongue meat. I don't know what to do with this. And my friends, bless them, would just kind of sit there and nod and go like, okay. How's everything else going? Like, all right, I get it. There's not much going on here. And then, you know, thinking like, you know, what would be a natural match? It was like, oh, well, of course, a chick with clitoris is in her eyelids. It's perfect. I mean, of course it is. Like, and again, that's one of those, like, that's a drinking game right there for me. Somehow, in the midst of whatever drunken revelry, that stuff just kind of came together. Or perhaps it came to me in the hangover the following day, like, oh, Jesus, God, you know. I wish I could say there was something very specific. I could say that once the idea came to me, once I, you know, was solidly like, okay, I got this, let me do this. And I got to be honest, like, I think back now, and I think to myself, seriously, the fuck was I thinking? I really don't know. It's a bit of a black hole in my own brain as to, like, how that came about. I do know that my producer and friend Alex Kuchu came to me in the midst of all that to be like, hey, you know, we should make a movie together. I'll produce your next movie. And I was like, great. And then I pitched him 16 Tongues. I think it was still, pardon the term, embryonic at that point. And he said, sounds great, write it. I was like, okay. So then I just went off and started writing it. I was like, well, you know, if you think we can get something made, and I'll try to write something that we can afford to do. And I remember being very specifically inspired by two things when I started writing, which was David Lynch's Dune and The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, I wanted to have three disparate characters who were somehow connected by this one thing who come together at the end. And I specifically thought to myself, not only do I want it to be like that, but I want it to be the exact opposite of Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, in that I wanted it to be completely claustrophobic and take place in one space as opposed to a whole bunch of different places. I wanted it to feel absolutely choking because Good, the Bad, and the Ugly is nothing but beautiful vistas and incredible budgetary expense with extras and explosions. I was like, no, I want to go the exact opposite of that. With Dune, one of the things I love about David Lynch's Dune is the absolutely superfluous voiceover that is nonstop in that movie. And it makes me laugh, but I also think it's genius in its own weird way. Like, it's because it's really disorienting sometimes. And I mean, just really head scratching stuff. And I've never written voiceover before. So I was like, fuck it. I'm just going to write, you know, a ton of voiceover. And some of it's going to be nonsensical. Some of it is going to explain obvious things, and some of it is just going to be stream of consciousness stuff that's going on in the middle of a scene as if to indicate there's another movie going on in the theater next door, and maybe you think you're hearing it while you're watching this.
Yeah, which is really unusual, trust me. I remember finally seeing 16 Tongues and saying, okay, this man's brain is abnormal, and I love it. Seriously.
Well, thank you. You should be my psychiatrist. You can make a lot of money. Yes, I guess it is. But I'm glad you love it, because it's an unloved movie. You know, Shattered, it has its fans. I don't meet too many people who, who've even seen 16 Tongues. But I also don't know many people who like it as much, because it is definitely, it's dense, layered, it's not as much it's not as much fun as Shattered Day, which is a funny thing to say.
No, it's not.
Shattered Day is the most funless movie ever made. It's funless. And then to think that there'd be something that comes along that's even less fun, well, I've got – it's like, hold my beer. I got this beat. Give me a moment. And then here's 16 Tongues. Even less fun. It also – it's problematic because it kind of embraces pornography, which I think makes it a difficult sell for some people. And I'm just going to come out and say it, too. There's also – there's no Caucasian characters in it. And I think it throws people off because I know when the time that it came out, you know, I think the fan base was mostly, you know, Caucasian boys. And basically I've got two Asian females and one African-American male. These are my lead characters. And I think somehow it got passed over by people. I think now it actually would have a better chance out in the world, now that it's more multicultural and acceptable to have non-white leading characters in your science fiction movies. But at the time, if you look back on what was coming out around then, it really is an anomaly,
mm-hmm.
which is unfortunate.
It doesn't
speak well of the fan base to me.
You know, it's not an easy film to watch, okay? But
no,
we've talked about this. My background is, you know, I was part of I was working at a drive-in, and he used to run all the Russ Meyer films and sexploitation films. So I've got my one foot in there, and I got my one foot in art house, and it's like, that's perfect. 16 Tons is perfect for me. But the thing is, if you write a film for me,
and I thank you.
If you write a film for me, it ain't going to make money. Sorry.
You've seen two of my features. Do I look like someone who's trying to make money? I don't think so. Yeah, you know, look, if I want
to
make money, I'd write a slasher film.
You know, you make them for yourself. And then who connects with it is who connects with it. I mean, that's the one thing about DIY filmmaking. You're not. You're making it for yourself. I mean, we've had so many people on here. We've had Joel Weinkoop and Mark Pirro, and a number of people who do these DIY things, and it's all the same. You know, they make them for themselves, and it's an expression of who, what, and who you are, and people will connect with that in certain ways, you know, or not connect with it. But you know, that's their problem. That's not your problem.
No, I agree. Like, I'd say, like, both Shattered Dead and 16 Tons are basically, they're both message-in-a-bottle movies. And by that, I mean, you make them, you put the paper in the bottle, you just throw it in the ocean, and see where it goes, see if anyone finds it. You know, because they're not, you know, I know they're not going to Netflix anytime soon. And that's fine. They probably shouldn't be on Netflix. But, yeah, you know, it's nice to not worry about that kind of thing when you're making them. Like, they're inexpensive enough. 16 Tongues cost considerably more than Shattered Dead did because of all the makeup effects and whatnot. But, you don't think about that when you're making them. You know, I mean, really, when you're making them, you're just trying to get it the fuck over with. We got 10 days, and then, you know, they're 10 of the longest days you'll ever have in your life. Let me tell you, they just... You know, there's just even the moments of fun feel like a red hot poker in your eye, just because there's just so much to contend with and deal with. And you have no money, and you're trying to make sure that everything comes out good, and you want people to feel good about the work that they're doing as well. You know, and there's all sorts of you're just dealing with so much stuff a minute to minute basis, even for a no budget project like these were. So you're just trying to make the best thing you could possibly make without ending up in a hospital from exhaustion. And so just when it's done, there's a real feeling of accomplishment. But to go through all that work, to go through all that effort just to make something that anyone else could have made, I don't see how people do that. I don't see how it's worth that struggle. Like, I feel like I'm not putting other people down. Everyone has their love. And they need to do what they love. But I know for me that, you know, if you said to me, hey, do you want to do this Halloween sequel? Do you want to do like a sequel to some other franchise, whatever? I'm not picking on Halloween. Do you want to work with someone else's characters? Would you want to just make a slasher film or a something more commercial? It's just to the amount of work that goes into making something just doesn't seem worth it to me to come out with something ordinary. And in the end, what's the point of that?
And one thing I can say for sure is your films are not ordinary, not by a long shot.
Not by a long shot.
That's why you're on the Incredibly Strange Films podcast, my friend. Just wanted you
trust me, I appreciate that. I'm happy to be here amongst whatever like-minded folks decide to listen to this. You know, and then, of course, then there's 16 Tongues, then there's St. Frankenstein, you know, which is a whole other, it's short, yes, but it certainly exists in the same universe as the other two projects. And, you know, as these things go, it's the most expensive of the three, and it's the shortest. You know, we're talking about an 17 or 18 minute movie here. But, you know, at least it's got the cachet. It's got like this magnificent score from Fabio Frizzi, the maestro, for God's sakes. You know, this goes back to Shatterhead. You know, Shatterhead being inspired by Fulci the Fulci movies is equally inspired by the music of Maestro Frizzi. You know, and his work with Fulci.
So tell us a little bit about St. Frankenstein and also the connection with Fritzi and how that came about. Because that I definitely want to cover also for our listeners.
Yeah, I mean, that was the reason that St. Frankenstein happened is, this is going back a number of years. Let me see. It was probably in mid-October mid-October. So going back, I'm going to say 7 years to the day as we're recording this, you know, more or less. Alex, my producer Alex, and I were approached by David Gregory at Severin Films because he was putting together an anthology project called Betamax, and he had contacted a couple of movie makers. And it was going to be an anthology where everyone just did their own thing. And, And I was like, oh, that sounds like fun. You know, no one's ever asked me to do one of these before. And I never really thought about doing a short. I've always been like shorts are, you know, useless. And I've never really thought about doing one. But as part of an anthology, well, you know, at least it's a feature length thing. It'll get out there. People will see it. So here was mid-October. And the problem was the deadline was January. We were contacted late and they were working to get this thing done as quickly as possible. So we're talking about, that gave me November and December to work on something. And it was like, holy shit, that's insane. So I immediately was like, what's the first thing that came to mind? And I wrote a little thing called The Initiation of Maureen, which, 15 page script. It was really good. It was exactly the kind of thing you'd expect to see in anthology, but it was dark, sexually twisted, and fun, and about Betamax tapes. It was a period piece. And I'd written it, and Alex took a look and said, wow, this is really good, but it's a little challenging. And so he took it around to see if we can get a crew together to shoot it. And to a person, all we got was like, this script is really great, and I like it a lot. I won't work on it. And it was like, holy shit. So we kept getting these reactions from people. I'm like, what the fuck are we going to do? We need to find a crew, and we need to find performers fast. And I was like, okay, you know what? We're just going to have to abandon that one for now and see what we can do. So I came up with another idea, which was a kind of little short zombie thing, and I wrote it and looked at it, and I was like, it's good, I like it, but I wasn't in love with it. And then finally, mm-hmm. the third one out of the gate was, is there anything else I can do? And I was like, well, I've never done, I love Frankenstein. I've never thought about doing a Frankenstein movie before. And then I thought, there's a short, that could be interesting. And I basically wrote St. Frankenstein in 2 days. I basically sat down, wrote the first 10 pages one day, and then the second day wrote the next 10 pages. And it was done. That was it. And I looked at it, I showed it to Alex, and he was like, oh, this is good. I was like, yeah, I think this is good, right? We can maybe do this. I think at that point it was maybe November 1st, I'm going to say. So in the course of like 2 or 3 weeks, I wrote like 3 short scripts. And then we were like, okay, let's get to work. We got to find actors and crew. And we found Melanie, the lead, who's a model, through a friend of mine had recommended. I didn't write the part for her. And then when I saw her, I was like, oh, there's no one else can play this part. She's just amazing looking. And it turned out, we were lucky, turned out to be a great actress, really spectacular, and lovely to work with. I just can't say enough good things about her. And then, of course, for the second lead, although really they're co-leads. They're both their names are on screen at the same time because they're the only two performers in the movie. I was like, oh, I wrote it for Tina Krause. I was like, this is for Tina. I love Tina so much, and I've worked with her before. She's on 16 Tongues. She has a memorable brief scene in there as one of the dancing bears. And I was like, I owe her a good part, and I thought this was just perfect for her. And she read it, and she's like, yeah, I got to do this. This is great. So I had my two actresses very quickly. We got a crew together fast, and we shot it and edited it. And somewhere along the way, I had met Fabio Frizzi about 3 years earlier because I was writing at that time. I was writing a blog for Film Score Monthly, and I had noted that his birthday was coming up. So I wrote a tribute to Maestro Frizzi, and I don't know how this came about, but it occurred to me, I wonder if he's on Facebook. I checked, there he was, and I contacted him, and I sent him a link to the thing that I wrote, just saying, you know, I love your music. Here's this thing I wrote. I just want you to see this, you know, just to let you know there's someone over here. You know, you got fans all over the world, but I wrote this piece. I think you'll like it. And he did. He loved it. He was like, oh, my God. It turned out he was coming to New York, I think, a month or two later. And he said, hey, I'm coming to New York. I said, well, holy shit, if you're coming to New York, I'll take you out to dinner. He said, okay, let's do that. I said, okay. So Alex and I took out the maestro and his family, his wife and kids. We went to Chinatown because he wanted to go to Chinatown. We took him to the famous Wo Hop restaurant, the downstairs one. And, you know, we paid for the meal. So there was like 6 or 8 of us, whatever it was. So, of course, at Wo Hop, the meal was like, it was $25 to feed all of us. You know, it was insanely inexpensive. And we just had such a lovely evening. It was great. We, you know, ended up walking around afterwards. And it's like, oh, my God, I'm here with, like, one of my heroes. You know, we're hanging out. And when we were talking, I had, back in 94, long story, but at the Fangoria convention where Maestro Fulci showed up, he was stranded here for a week because of the blizzard of 94. So while he was here, I took care of him at the hotel. I would go visit him and have, you know, dinner with him every night, tried to help him with some medical stuff he was trying to have taken care of, and just, you know, made sure he was taken care of because the Creation Convention, the scumbags were running it, abandoned him, basically. It was a Fangoria / Creation Convention. The Fangoria people were helpful, and they were trying to, you know, make sure everything was working out. But the real guy in charge, I think it was Adam Malin, real piece of shit, just kind of like left him in the fucking snow. And they're never to be forgiven, a scum. Anyway, oh, where was the story going? Yes, so, as I divert, you know, this is what happens when you talk to me. I'm sorry, Carl. So from there, cut back to Alex and I talking, and it's like, well, I'm just going to score St. Frankenstein myself because we have no money. And but we were talking at some point, and I don't know how it came up, and I said, you know, God, wouldn't it be amazing if we could ask the maestro to score this? And we're like, you know what? What the hell? How much? Let's see how much it'll cost. Maybe we can do it. It's a short. Maybe we can afford that. So we contacted him. He read this. I don't remember if he'd read the script or we showed him the cut, but he just went gaga. He was like, holy, what? He's like, this is just great. I want to work on this with you guys. And I don't want to discuss finances, but he gave us an unbelievable deal where I was like, yeah, we can do that. Yeah, no problem. And he was very busy at the time. He had a very short window availability, and we just happened to catch him. I think he had like a week or two in between two major projects. So in the course of that, he wrote and recorded the music. And, you know, that really, we talked via Zoom or whatever it was at the time. You know, we talked over face-to-face on the web. And we went over notes and did talk and whatever else. But then it was all in his lap. And then he sent us. It was like, here's the music. And he sent it over. And I got to tell you, there is nothing more nerve-wracking than getting that music, you know, that first listen. Like, holy shit. And Alex and I were both there, you know, like, okay, we're going to, okay, grab that drink. We clinked our scotch glass and we hit play, you know. And we just, then we were both absolutely fucking gobsmacked at the score that he delivered. I mean, beyond my wildest dreams. Beautiful. I've joked with him since. The last time he was in New York, he came to visit. We were hanging out. We had dinner over here at my place. And I was like, you know, for the amount of money spent here, you accidentally gave us your most beautiful theme. I was like, Maestro, you gave us a theme that is just like second to none here. I mean, I feel like we really shortchanged you, you know. But he said, no. He's so proud and happy with the music and the short. And his wife loves it as well. And so it's one of the biggest badges of honor for me about St. Frankenstein is that I'm proud of his movie and I'm very happy that it got made and blah, blah, whatever, all the usual stuff. But it's got that music by the maestro in it. And the fact that he loves it as much as we do is, I'm like, I'm done. That's it. You know, we were saying before that audience of one, when your audience of one is Maestro Fabio Frizzi, that's an audience of one I'm very proud to have, and I don't need anyone else after that.
Yeah, understood. So one thing, you mentioned it a little bit, but I wanted to – what makes St. Frankenstein stand out from the other Frankenstein movies and adaptations that we've seen?
I think the first and foremost in some ways, and it's funny because there's other real things that make it stand out, but one of the things that I find makes it stand out is there's no mad lab. There's no creation scene. It's just taken for granted. It's like, it's Frankenstein. And Frankenstein is, well, in this piece, Frankenstein has the name Shelley. So I'm going to refer to Shelley as Shelley instead of Frankenstein just because it's easier to say. But yeah, there's no mad lab involved. Shelley just goes around and does their thing. And I think for that reason alone, the staying away from trying to show how Frankenstein is. There's always some weird arch that's like someone's got a lab in the basement. You know, the second I see that in a movie anymore, I'm like, it's just very suspect to me. It's like, I'm calling bullshit. No one has a lab in their basement. No one's doing this now. Like, no one would make Frankenstein now the way that Frankenstein would have been made 200 years ago. You know, they'd be growing Frankenstein in a petri dish instead of trying to use dead body parts. It just doesn't make sense anymore. So I feel like the supposition is that if you're trying to do Frankenstein in a modern way, you kind of have to be more modern. You can't just be, it's about sticking together dead body parts, because frankly, it's stupid. And I've never seen anyone really pull that off. In a serious way. Certainly it worked in a comedic way. Frankenhooker is fucking brilliant and it's hilarious. And it, you know, goes to all these wonderful territories. The other thing that I'm proudest of or most interested in about Shelley and St. Frankenstein is the whole idea of what is, you know, is sexual identity, which intrigues me. And I feel like is an important part of, if you're going to modernize the Frankenstein mythos, how you would approach that. If your body can be changed at whim, you can move limbs around, you can, maybe you want to have a third arm today, you know, maybe you want, so why wouldn't you be able to have a vagina and a penis, or two penises, or two vaginas, and as many nipples as you want, and as many fingers as you want on each hand, maybe a third foot. I mean, maybe you could put like a fucking, what do they call them, a bike. It's like a parking brake or something so you can actually lean with your leg. You know, things like that. It's like, why do you need to be a slave to the accepted form of what human is if you're going to be in the process of continually changing and updating a 200-year-old body? You know, so that continues to intrigue me. And in fact, that's one of the reasons why I'll never get to this for a long time. But I am now at this point, I think 25 or 30 pages into writing a St. Frankenstein novel that is, it just takes basically St. Frankenstein, the short, is just the opening scene to a much larger universe as to what that character is. You know, to me, Shelley is a lot like the Jerry Cornelius character from the Moorcock books. This kind of...
Oh, my God. You hit so much of... I'm a huge fan of the Jerry Cornelius. Huge.
Yeah, a spectacular character. But and you,
yeah,
you sort of put that in there, but then... Okay.
I said, you're hitting all my sweet spots. Good God. No wonder
we're
friends.
Program is like one of my all-time favorite movies, you know? And I'm the one who goes out on a limb all the time and says, I think it's better than the book. I think Moorcock can be a really sloppy writer sometimes. He's filled with great ideas, but I feel like sometimes, you know, some of those older Moorcock, Cornelius books, it's like, okay, I get it. You were on a lot of drugs at the time, but... You know, there's a core story here that's also interesting, and of course the character of Cornelius himself is just, and plus some of the cohorts that he's dealing with there. So that was important to me, and I thought, why shouldn't Frankenstein be like Jerry Cornelius in that, you know, could change sex, can be a rock star, can be a scientist, can be all of these things. You know, the closest we got to that in our, you know, a lifetime that I can remember is like Buckaroo Banzai. But Buckaroo Banzai
exactly.
Was very much the PG version, you know, the rated PG version of Jerry Cornelius, which is fine. I love Buckaroo Banzai. But, you know, it's obvious what they were trying for there.
Mm-hmm. And no, very true. And just remember, wherever you go, there you are.
exactly.
My favorite line from that movie is, lithium is no longer available for credit.
Right. Yeah, I mean,
which is over the loudspeaker at the insane asylum.
He's anyway. Mad at the night. The truth is what you are in the dark. You know, it's amazing lines. It's filled with quotable stuff.
You know, one of the things, I don't know if you're familiar. Do you know Rob Schmidt at all? Or
oh,
who I mean by Rob Schmidt?
Soon purchase.
Okay.
Did
you know Rob? Yeah, because Rob's been on the show, and Rob and I are good friends. In fact, I was on one of he invited me to one of his people that he has the Zoom meetings with at Emory College. You familiar with Rob and what he did on his short? He did Fran K, which is a LGBTQ take. On Frankenstein. Did you know that?
Oh, shit. I need to see that.
Yeah. Yeah, you
Let
should
know,
get in
you
touch
could,
with Rob.
If the link's in there, I would love to see that. I didn't really... Oh, that's so funny. I remember, like, you know, we were students at SUNY Purchase together, and I remember he did some work on my senior film for, like, a day or two. I remember he did some tech stuff for us, and I don't know if I worked on any of his stuff, because he was an undergrad... At the time, at SUNY Purchase, if you were a senior, you basically, which is what I was at the time working on my senior film, you just used the underclassmen wherever you could to help you out as crew and whatnot. So I think I was either 2 years or 1 year ahead of Rob. I don't remember offhand, but I do remember he came on to the senior shoot for a day. In my senior film at some point, like everyone worked on, Nick Gomez did a day or two on it. You know, it's all these SUNY people who went on to like real careers. Would come on to help for a day or two on my little shoot.
Yeah, yeah, but you know what? Be proud of what you've done, because what you've done is very unique, Scooter. It really is. There's nothing out there like it. And I'll be the first one to
waves a flag, and you keep stop thanking me. I'm one of your fans. You don't have to fucking thank me.
Look, I really do appreciate it. I mean, sincerely, it's hard to hear this stuff sometimes. I mean, I know it sounds nuts, but if someone's saying nice things about your work, it's very meaningful. I can't say enough that. And so it's really sincerely appreciated, you know. And you're right. Maybe I do apologize or say thank you too much, but I'm sincere when I say it. I really am, like, thank you. And by the way, before you get to shovel too much dirt on me there, I ain't dead yet, motherfucker. I'm just telling you, I'm hoping that
I'm glad to hear it.
Next, I'm hoping that in 2022 I'm trying to get a project to come together, and I don't know if it's going to happen. I am actively working on it. I have a script, and now over the course of the next 6 months, I need to see if I can get the money together, which is what I'm working on, and then find actors and crew. It's a low budget thing, but I am definitely trying to have at least one good last hurrah before I retire, you know, because, you know, I'm getting on in years. I'm 55 now. It takes a lot of energy to make these kind of things. So I'm thinking, like, you know, I might have one good last burst of idiot energy left in me now to actually, like, spend a year or two working on something, you know, and getting it out of my system and, you know, put it, you know, my poor beloved friends who will
trust me. I know the feeling. That's why I'm working
out.
Yeah, I mean, I know the feeling. That's why I'm, you know, working hard on the podcast and trying to make it the best we can, and got a whole crew together, and we're going to be making a couple steps here in a while. But yeah, I mean, I understand exactly what you're saying. So anyway, at this point, I'm going to do a little bit of housekeeping. But I want you to stick around because I think you might be interested in a couple of these things. So when we do housekeeping, this is what we've got planned.
I'm here for it. I'm here for you.
Okay. So yesterday I was very, very happy to be a guest on two shows. One was Cameron Sullivan over at Retro TV had me on as a guest, and we talked about the Adventures of Briscoe County, Jr., and that was a nice little podcast. And then afterwards, a friend of mine who runs a podcast group called XV Planets, John Killian, and I sat down, and we did a short sort of overview on Mike Flanagan's new Midnight Mass, which is on Netflix, something I recommend highly for you to watch, Scooter.
Okay.
And the thing is, we are planning.
Interesting.
Yeah, we are planning to do a episode by episode commentary. We'll probably do that in late November, but it has a lot of religious context to it, and so there's that. And of course, today I have you on, which is always great. But coming up on Friday, John Killian and I are going to be doing a commentary on Pontypool, and we'll be doing that, a commentary on Pontypool on Sunday. Doc Sludge is going to come back into the fold, and Eric is going to be doing a commentary watch on Roar with me. And on Monday, here's one for you, Scooter. My friend Patrick Crane, who is out of Oklahoma City, and he is the head of the Oklahoma City film group up there, and a writer. He and I are doing a podcast on sexploitation horror. And if you don't think I'm not going to be mentioning you and and your films, you're crazy. But we'll be talking. But he'll be focusing more on the hardcore stuff, and I'll be focusing more on the softcore. So we'll be talking about Jess Franco and of course, Sean Rolene, yes, you too, Scooter, and a couple others, and Attack
That's
of the Bee-Girls.
Beautiful,
yes,
company to
absolutely.
Be I'm honored. I love Rolene.
Yeah,
get some
absolutely.
Get some Baruff chicken there.
And then on
a week from this coming Friday, Adam Ferenz and Cathode Ray Mission, we're going to be doing the Golden Age of Horror Films, and we're going to be talking about films from the 1930s on to the mid-40s. So we'll be doing that also. Also, later in the month, though not set in stone yet, we're going to have horror author Keith Lawrence on, and he has a new novel out, plus also a number of his short story collections and previous novels are being reprinted. So we're also going to have him. We also have a number of other things planned for October and spooky season. So that's going to be a lot of fun. But one other thing that we have planned. So John and I, we both came up with this idea, Scooter, and we're going to do a test run this Saturday, and John's going to produce. But what we have is we have a round table of a bunch of people, and the bunch of people is me as a liberal Christian. John is very, very much in the same ballpark as you. We have my ex-wife, who believes that aliens came down and seated us. We have a very much a much more conservative Pentecostal Christian, and we're going to be doing a roundtable of basically doing one specific point during a roundtable, and the first one we're going to do is on forgiveness, and so that's going to be something completely different than what you're used to. We are expanding what we're doing here at Deviant Legion. We also have Mika, who comes in and does a whole monthly show on from a woman's point of view with just women on the panel, and me producing and just basically keeping my mouth shut. And that's also really good too. And the last one we did on that was on abortion and the abortion laws in Texas. So, you know, we are definitely expanding what we're doing. We also have some things planned on going to other platforms, and that's in process right now. I hope that will be done by at least mid-November. But we're still in the planning stages on a lot of stuff. But we're definitely moving forward here at Deviant Legion. And one other thing, if you ever want to get into podcasting again, Scooter, we've got you covered. I'm not kidding about that either. Okay,
I got to tell you.
So that's what we got. What do you think? Go ahead.
Oh no, it was just a lot of work. That was the only reason that we stopped. It was very time consuming. Strangely, you know, just it was a bad period. You know, like I was really busy with stuff, and it was very hard to fit that in. But I do miss it. We'll see what happens. Maybe because Mike and I have a really good time hanging out and talking too, Mr. Hunchback. And I know he was interested in getting back together and doing something again like that. So part of it was contingent upon my schedule, which was, you know, miserable for the last 8 months between the 4 months of restoration, 5 months, whatever it was, and then working on this book that's coming out, and then some other creative projects that I'm still working on, which will take me through to the end of the year at this point, to say the least.
Well, listen, if you ever have any time of that and would want to do a watch on things like the Cornelius film or whatever, just let me know. We can work that out so you have some fun. Seriously, I'm not kidding about that.
Maybe you and I will do that for our first in-person drink, if nothing else. We'll figure that out after the show. But now that we've done this, we'll finally see if we can actually see each other face-to-face at some point soon.
Seriously, we need to do that. I agree.
Absolutely.
Wholeheartedly. All right. And Scooter, I want to thank you very, very much for being on with us. As always, it's a pleasure. And don't be such a stranger. Come on back when the book is published, and let us know how to get it. And before you go, let us know all about where we can see all your films and what's happening. So give us a plug here.
The Shattered Dead Blu-ray will be out from Vinegar Syndrome slash Saturn's core video at the end of October. So that's going to be in the next 2 or 3 weeks. I'm not sure the exact date it's dropping, but it will be in time for Halloween, I guess, which is a lovely idea. If you want to have a truly miserable and depressing Halloween, I recommend Shatterdead. 16 Tongues is currently, I'm going to say, out of print. It doesn't mean you can't find copies of it, but currently it is not with a distributor, but I can tell you that in 2022, it will be with a distributor, hint, hint, and it will be out in the world again on Blu-ray. So just give that one a little time, and it's going to look and sound better than it ever has. Saint Frankenstein is currently available for viewing for free on Vimeo, and all you have to do is go to your computer and type in www.saintfrankenstein.com, and it will take you to the Vimeo page, and you may watch the movie for free. There's no tricks, nothing, no stigma attached. I will tell you that if you decide to do this, that it is an NC-17 movie, and I would recommend that you either be over 18 or that you view it without children anywhere within sight or sound of whatever speaker system you might be listening to. I would also recommend that you watch it with good speakers because the music is beautiful, and I promise you, you might even be moved to tears by it, dare I say, Maestro Fritzi at the height of his powers. But when is he not at the height of his powers is the question. And to that I answer, never. And then finally, I guess for now, the book of the script of Shattered Ed will be coming out from, I keep saying Happy Cloud Pictures, but I don't know if that's also the name of the print division, but that's Mike and Amy Watt, both of whom I dearly love. And that's going to be coming out through their imprint via Happy Cloud Pictures. And that book is the original last surviving copy script of Shattered Dead that I found. Each page will have notes, never-before-seen photos. There is then in the book after that original script, which is not very long, I think it's only 42 pages, a 10-page treatment for a sequel to Shattered Dead that I was hoping would get made that would at that time have a budget of about $100 million. That didn't happen. I just want to mention that in case anyone was confused and thought it might have happened. It will never happen. And then finally in this book as well is an unpublished, an unfilmed screenplay for a sequel to Shattered Dead. And it is a spiritual sequel to Shattered Dead in that none of the continuing characters from the first one are in it. So this is a movie that takes place around the same time and under the same conditions as the first Shattered Dead, but with different characters and in a very location, headspace, and with goals in mind. And if I do say so myself, I would say that it's a very, very good script. And I will tell you, Carl, that if you're interested in a movie that addresses religion head on and is also a horror film, this is the one. It's called Shattered Dead, Death and Taxes. And I tell you that it is the most religious horror film I've ever written and one of the most religious horror films I think I've ever, if it had been made, ever seen. So I think it's right up your alley. Not that I'm trying to sell you a book. I'll try to get your copy, maybe. But see, if I get a free copy, I'll get a book for you. I'm just saying.
Anything you do interests me. Seriously, as far as what you've done and what I've seen. So,
dude, you're like a printed always, money machine for me. Thank you.
as always, Scooter, it is a pleasure to have you on, and I so thank you for being with us tonight. And good luck
Anthony,
in everything.
Absolutely.
And again. Check out his films and absolutely deserves your support. Very individual artist. And I want to thank Scooter and I want to thank everyone who's listening. And we will see you next week. All right. Scooter, thanks a lot, man. We'll be in touch.
You got it, my
absolutely.
Friend. Thank you.
Okay. All right, folks. We're going to call it a night. So, Scooter, why don't we just say, good night.
Good night.
sleep tight and don't let the bed bugs bite. Good night, everyone.
Those are the bed bugs biting.